So I just got back from an hour and a half jog this morning, and I had a lot of interesting ideas that I'd like to share. And that was my repentance for my date with Betty Crocker last night. Me and Betty have had quite the relationship through the years. You know, we broke it off a bit when I was in Europe, but now we're kind of together again. And yeah, although sometimes I cheat on her with Mrs. Fields. So, what I want to talk about today, and this was triggered by someone who posted on the Osho group's wall that I made about the Book of Secrets, and the guy is called Free Thought or Free Spirit or Free Something or Rather, and ascension2012.org.uk is his address. Maybe that's kind of an apocalyptic address. And I feel sorry for him having to change it when it's 2013. So, anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about white knight syndrome. Now, white knight syndrome, and I think we should come up with a female version of this as well, because it sometimes happens, especially with very sensitive, empathetic women or healers. And bear with me a bit today because I've got some hay fever kicking in. No more milk for me. Milk products always make me have hay fever when the grasses are ripe. And the theory is that the small particulates in the milk go through the stomach walls and lining where, through too much stress, your stomach lining is damaged and enters the bloodstream directly, and that causes all sorts of issues because you've got little pieces of milk which have been homogenized. Which they shouldn't have been, because milk molecules are much bigger, actually, which is why you have cream in real milk, fresh milk, cow's milk. But homogenization makes the molecules very small. Molecules pass through the walls, the membrane of the stomach, they enter the bloodstream, and then they cause all sorts of issues. And I was weak yesterday, had some milk with a brownie. And today I have hay fever. So until I get my black caraway squared away, so 1 to 3 grams of that every day, well, no, 1 to 3 grams of that every few hours, basically eliminates my hay fever without resorting to any dangerous drugs. Every hay fever drug that I tried, I don't even remember what they're called, but every hay fever drug that I tried actually resulted in heart damage, they found out later, and took it off the market. Basically, you know, any drug that you find 5 years later, they're going to say it's too dangerous to use and take it off the market. That lets them have something always on the market, regardless of how dangerous it is. Kind of a good deal for the pharmaceutical industry. But yeah, I didn't want that heart damage stuff going on. So this is much better. Black caraway. Schwarzkümmel in German. And yeah, if I get pills of those, tablets of those, it's sort of an oil actually that's inside, and I take about 6 of those every 4 hours, I'm okay. Or about a teaspoon, basically, every 4 hours, which is quite a bit of that stuff, but it's fairly cheap compared to most pharmaceuticals that you'll pay for. It's super cheap. And that does the deal. So, anyway, for me, that does it. No health advice, don't sue me, but anyway, that's what I do. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. We're talking about the white knight syndrome. Now, the white knight syndrome is, it must be funny for people to watch who actually don't have it or do it, because most people are smart and they just pursue their own pleasure and needs and desires. And that's actually how it should be. You know, a baby doesn't get up every morning and say, "Mom, how are you feeling? What do you need?" My hunger comes second. If it did, the baby would, you know, die, so, or be very, very hungry and cranky and irritable. So the baby needs to take care of its own needs, and I would say the mother needs to take care of its own needs, of her own needs, as well. And if everybody's taking care of their own needs, then everybody has enough energy, time, space, power, whatever, to be able to give to everyone else, right? If your gas tank is empty, you're not taking anyone anywhere. Yeah, so anyway, back to what I was talking about, white knight syndrome. And this must be funny for people who don't deal with it, but for those of us who've dealt with it, it's a big deal. And it's the tendency for you to go in and try and save someone in a relationship. So, typically, you find someone and they have amazing potential and you see some warning signs, but you kind of ignore them and then you begin a relationship with them. And your main job in this relationship is to fix them and help them reach their potential. Now, they're not paying you to do this. They probably didn't ask you to do this. But you feel it's your duty because, you know, you can see so clearly their magical potential. And, you know, maybe they even accept some of this help initially, and you start working with them, and, you know, you're doing whatever spiritual practices or your yoga or whatever it is you're sharing with them, telling them about things you're seeing and helping them with their consciousness and all of this nonsense. I hate to call it nonsense, but in this context, it really is. And a couple things can happen. First of all, they can get dependent on you, helping them with their spiritual growth, which, you know, we're all supposed to help people, and that's a fantastic thing to do, and I'll define spiritual growth a bit later, but if you're not moving spiritually unless someone else is pushing you, it's a bit exhausting for the person doing the pushing. And at some point, you're going to get tired and resentful and not like that they're making you push them into spiritual progression. Which reminds me of a poem. You all know the Footprints poem, the famous Footprints poem where the person is walking along the shore and God is walking with them, and then sometimes there's one set of footprints and sometimes there's two, and wherever it's tough, there's only one, and it's a, look up Footprints if you haven't heard it, because it's kind of a delightful spiritual fast food parable. But there's another one that's called Butt Prints, and I really like this one, because this is how you feel at some point if you're the white knight, or what do we call it, the white knightess, we'll call it the white knightess for the female version. To be politically correct today. So here it is. One night I had a wondrous dream. One set of footprints there was seen. The footprints of my precious Lord, but mine were not along the shore. And then some stranger prints appeared, and I asked the Lord, what have we here? Those prints are large and round and neat, but Lord, they are too big for feet. My child, he said in somber tones, for miles I carried you alone. I challenged you to walk in faith, but you refused and made me wait. You disobeyed, you would not grow. The walk of faith you would not know. So I got tired, I got fed up, and there I dropped you on your butt. Because in life there comes a time when one must fight and one must climb. When one must rise and take a stand or leave their butt prints in the sand. Yeah, and that's what happens with the whole white knight, white knightess syndrome. You're helping someone, figuring them out. Actually, and if as you dump energy into them, the other thing that can happen is suppose you heal them, what do they do then? Well, they'll leave. They're self-sufficient. Also happens very often. But anyway, you're helping someone, and you're going to get tired of, quote, helping, unquote, if your needs aren't getting met within the relationship, and you're going to drop them. And when you drop them, how do they feel? Either way, it's not going to go good. When you drop them, how do they feel? You've abandoned me. You were my new mother, my new father. You were helping me with my spiritual growth, and you just dumped me. So you're a bad person, right? You didn't have needs before. You didn't mention these. You didn't talk about these. So why is it all of a sudden you can drop me? So you're going to make a big enemy from the person who should be your friend in your relationship. So resentment is bred. You get angry with this person if they don't make the progress you think they should be making. Eventually, you get apathetic, and you realize this was never something that fulfilled you or strengthened you in such a way that you could actually continue with this relationship for a decent amount of time anyway. It would only work if the person would change. Well, let's talk about change for just a minute. How successful are you about changing yourself? Look at any particular thing you'd like to change in your life. Maybe lose some weight or become more disciplined in some way. Write that great novel or run a marathon or whatever it is that your next goal is, that your next desire is, that you realize will require work and time and investment. And realize this is so rare in our society that when someone actually does it, really accomplishes their goals, we make a documentary or a YouTube video about it and post it, and everyone says, wow, that's so cool, I wish I could do that. So it's not super common for people to reach their goals. And that's kind of how things are set up. That's kind of how society is based, the crab bucket idea, if you know that. But anyway, so if it's that hard to change yourself, then imagine how hard it is to change someone else. If you say you want to lose 20 pounds, something I'm actually working on at the moment, suppose you put all of your time and energy and power into that, you will find that one goal like that, to seriously change something, some pattern, some system in your life that isn't working the way you want and has all sorts of components and complexities and unconscious motivations, etc., to just do that one thing will be so difficult, complex, and confusing that it requires all of your energy. And you don't really have too much energy for a lot of other dilly-dallying or playing or messing around while you're working with that one thing. So if changing one thing about yourself takes all your energy, why are you going to take your energy, or how much energy you're going to spend to change someone else? You will find you actually don't have any energy to change anyone else if you are sincerely working on changing one thing about yourself. And then the next thing about yourself, and developing more conscious here, and starting meditation, and then losing weight, and then becoming in your professional or contribution to society fields as strong as you can be, you basically will stop trying to influence anyone else, stop trying to help anyone else. You won't be able to. Where are you supposed to get the energy for that? Your life energy isn't there to cause other people to change, especially in ways that they're not ready to do it. And of course, as you do this, you know, imagine you walk up to someone on the street and say, well, you look like you're overweight, let me help you lose weight. So first of all, as Jesus says, get the beam out of your own eye before you start looking at specks in other people's eyes. So they're going to take a look at you and say, hey, you're fat, why should I even listen to you? Oh, okay, good, that's one point. But assuming you're even completely in shape, how likely is it that someone on the street is just going to listen to you and say, oh, okay, what do I need to do? And then you say, well, you need to completely change your diet. You need to be shopping differently. It might be more expensive. You need to find 2 hours a day to do exercise. And also you need to look at stress and worries that you might have. You probably need to get therapy to deal with the emotional issues of it. The total investment will be, oh, I don't know, $1,000 a month or something like that. And then you need to spend a lot more time cooking and preparing your food. You need to eat slower, et cetera, et cetera, right? So this person has just met you. You're asking them to make all of these changes, changing literally a dozen variables in their life, because problems that we have generally have systems that keep them running. It's not just a little problem. That's just why just stopping smoking is difficult, because either the energy that was being repressed through smoking will go somewhere else, meaning the problem will manifest somewhere else. So you're not smoking anymore, but now you'll start drinking or you'll start something else, right? If you just concentrate on the one small aspect of the behavior that you're looking at instead of the complete system and complete problem that you're dealing with. So imagine going to someone and doing that, and you need to change all these things, you need to spend all this money and all this time because it's really important for you. You know, I mean, one person out of 100, one out of 1,000 will take you seriously. And even if they understood what you said, they can't really implement it without you holding their hand the whole time. And yeah, the investment is gargantuan. So looking at the world, looking at the person that you're trying to save or help or rescue in relationship, basically you met them and you're going into a bit of an unconscious contract. And I hate unconscious contracts. They happen all the time. And we have to deal with them. But, you know, conscious contract is the way to go when you're dealing with relationship. But the unconscious contract is, I will love you and stay with you if you change. But the person who you're, quote, helping, unquote, doesn't see that. They say, I will love you and stay with you. I enjoy spending time with you. So, of course, when you leave, you're breaking the contract from their point of view, their side. And, of course, it's perfectly justified to you when you leave, because then you say, hey, I mean, of course, I was assuming you were going to change, and if you're not, then I'm not loving you. Well, it also gives you a wonderful excuse to just jump out of the relationship, doesn't it? But let me say something else, and this may be a bit controversial. It's okay to be a white knight if you have made the relationship conscious. So if you go in somewhere and say, you know what, I think you're wonderful, I think you're beautiful, but for this relationship to work, I need you to stop smoking. You know, if that's one of your values, if that's one of your goals, if that's important to you, not goals, but if that's one of your values, if you hate it, kissing someone who's been smoking, then you can say that. You know, I would have a relationship with you, but you need to stop smoking, or you need to join Greenpeace, or you need to quit your job as a Wall Street executive, or you need to come to my stand-up comedy gigs, or whatever it is that is important for you, for this person to be in relationship with you. And then they can decide, yes, then everything's on the table and they can decide, okay, am I willing to give up smoking? Am I willing to quit my job? Or whatever it is that this person wants from me. And, you know, if they say, well, no, I'm not really willing to do that. If they say I'm willing to do that, are unwilling and unable to change that, then you guys can shake hands. And I always advise leaving a relationship shaking hands, if at all possible, which sometimes isn't possible till years later. But if you can possibly leave on good terms, it's so much better for everyone involved. But shake hands and say, well, okay, this isn't possible. This wasn't possible. You can't do it or you don't want to do it. That's fine. Then find someone who's happy with you just the way you are, which, you know, is fair. There's now 7 billion. We used to be saying 6 billion not too long ago. Now they've said the news of 7 billion. Although I'm wondering who's counting all these people. Yeah, like we're counting Calcutta. We're counting all sorts of places where, you know, anyway. So let's say there's 7 billion people. Let's say we believe the reports. 7 billion people, and you have a discrete list of needs, there's going to be someone or some set of people who is going to be able to meet your needs. And I'll say this again, I'll get into this more deeply when we talk about needs. It's funny that everything comes back to needs, but in relationship, well, relationship is about needs. And okay, I'll take one more branch, one more digression, and that is, relationship is, in my humble estimation, becoming aware of your needs, asking for them, and negotiating. And for me, that's all that relationship is. This became clear to me when I had a business relationship, and our business relationships were much, much more conscious than we are in our personal relationships a lot of the time. But anyway, assuming there are 7 billion people who can fulfill your needs in some way, and also they enjoy doing it, you know. You can ask 10 people for a hug, and even if they're random strangers, you'll probably get a hug from at least one of them. And the funny thing is, they won't be poor or feel put out, the person who says yes, to actually give you a hug. So actually, they may enjoy it. They probably will enjoy it. Yeah. So I'm opening the door for a little old lady, and immediately I get this warm glow inside. So they'll enjoy fulfilling your needs. Someone out of those 7 billion. So you don't need to work terribly hard on changing existing people. You just need to find those who fulfill the particular need that you have at the particular time. Okay, so those who are the victims of the white knight syndrome, meaning the people that you're trying to change, they don't have a problem. If they're happy the way they are, then you should leave them the heck alone. All right, saying that politely. So I'm not going to talk to those people, but I'm going to talk to the people who have the problem with the white knight syndrome, trying to change others and fix others, which, I mean, it must have been around in Jesus' time if he was talking about the speck and the beam. So first advice, first thing you do, don't. Yeah? Don't do what you think you're about to do. Don't step into a relationship where you see massive deficits that don't fulfill your needs. If you want to do that, go to some place where people realize that charity is being done. Go work in a soup kitchen, right? Go do psychological counseling for at youth risk or something at youth risk. How about at risk youth? There we go. At risk youth or something like that. But don't just try to change your relationship partners and mix up your contribution to the world and your spiritual giving with the place where you're getting your needs met. Because you're entering the relationship, and let's be completely honest about this, you're entering the relationship in order to get your needs met, not to meet someone else's needs. And to go in and say, well, you have a need for spiritual growth, so I'm going to come into this relationship and meet your need, assuming they haven't asked for that, especially if they haven't asked for that, and even if they do ask for it, then it's a topic of negotiation. But to walk in and say, well, you have this need and I'm going to meet your need, is to ignore your needs. It's to, and which is the purpose of relationship. And it's going to cause resentment on probably both sides because, you know, they're not going to be who they need to be to make you happy and or to meet your needs. Let's not say make you happy, but let's say to meet your needs. No matter how much effort you put into working with them, probably, just because of how difficult it is, especially if they're not aware of, oh, I'm supposed to change something to be with you. And you're going to be frustrated with their progress, and your needs aren't getting met in the meantime, so your tank is getting more and more empty. So you're going to be developing resentment against them, and then when you leave, they're going to resent you, saying, what's wrong? I'm just like I was when you met me. What's the problem? And you're going to say, that is the problem. And they're going to say, what's going on? So don't do it. So how do you avoid getting into relationships where you're trying to change others? The number one way is to become conscious of your needs. How do you become conscious of your needs? You add consciousness to your needs and your life by finding reflection. And I'm going to talk about this later, but one of the very important ways to find reflection is to find a counselor or a psychologist or a therapist or someone who can help you start to see why you feel, how you feel, simply through listening. And so that's an excellent way to develop consciousness about your needs, is therapy. Or asking friends and family, people who are close to you, what is it you think I need, or what is it you think I'm missing, or why don't you think I'm happy? What would I need? That's another way. And look at which needs from Maslow's hierarchy of needs you don't appear to be fulfilling. You'll find the basic ones, food, clothing, shelter, kind of obvious. If you don't have those things, you'll probably notice it rather quickly. And as you start to move up the list, and let's just be honest, sexual gratification and expression is on the basic level, and I could do an entire podcast about needs, and maybe I will in the near future, but as you start to move up to them, you get self-actualization at the top, which is kind of such a fuzzy concept for most of us that it might take a bit of talking to someone to figure out what that would mean for you, how that looks for you. But we have needs for communication. We have needs for community. We have needs for safety and protection. We have all sorts of needs. And the only reason you go into interaction with anyone is to try and get some of these needs met, because you realize that people are an excellent method at getting, or people are an excellent resource for getting needs met, to say it in a bit of a cold-hearted way, but that's how it is. And dropping the romance about relationship, especially romantic relationships, which sounds a bit paradox, but it's really true, dropping the romance about the concepts of relationship and actually looking at them from a utilitarian viewpoint will help you to avoid lots and lots of disappointment. Because as I say, when you, I say falling in love is accepting the irrational belief that another person is inordinately interested in meeting your needs. So it's an abandonment of logic to fall in love, which is fine if you realize you're in it and everything, but there will come a time when you wake up and realize that this person isn't around to meet your needs. They're there to meet their own needs. And if those needs coincide with what your needs are, then you guys are going to have a nice time. And when they stop being that, or if they're not, then you're going to have difficulties and you're going to need to find other avenues or negotiation abilities to get your needs met from then on. And just to give you some more ideas about needs, I got these from Marshall Rosenberg, 9 fundamental needs that every person has. In categorized, I mean, we can come up with, you know, hundreds of them if we all sit around and start talking about it. But basically, they've been boiled down to 9 fundamental needs. And he credits where he got them from. This is on his NVC Advanced Training CDs, if you want to listen to them or find it. But I don't remember where he got them from. But his needs list is sustenance, food, air, water, shelter, safety. Protection is number 2, safety and protection. Number 3, love. Number 4, empathy and presence. Wow, super important need. And something we're often looking for when we enter into a relationship. And something that we think we'll get when after we've healed someone as a white knight or white knightess. Somebody give me a better name for that. But anyway, something we're going to get after we've healed this person, empathy and presence. And it's something that we have to start at some level by giving ourselves before we're going to get any of it from anyone else. So next need, rest, recreation, and play. Super important. 6, community. 7, creativity. 8, autonomy and freedom. And 9, meaning, purpose, spirituality, and contribution to life. So those are basically 9 categories of needs that you're trying to get met on some level with a relationship. And if you're conscious of those, I mean, take it and write on a piece of paper those 9 different categories. Sustenance, safety, love, empathy, rest, recreation, play, community, creativity, autonomy, freedom, meaning, purpose, spirituality. Write 9 columns, write 9 different pieces of paper, however you have to do it, and start listing how this would be met, each of these needs would be met for you. And as you start listing, okay, my need for creativity, for one person it's music, for another person it's listening to music, for another person it might be painting, for another person it might be composing chess problems. You know, it just depends on who you are, how you get that need met, and write that down. And once you have that, then it'll be much easier to find people who are willing to help you meet those needs in specific ways, rather than trying to find the person that you need to change to get this basic need. Yes, to get this basic need met. So you have to abandon the white knight, white knightess syndrome. You do so, yes, by loving yourself, by all of these things, which don't make any sense until you've actually done them. But the way that makes sense for me is by becoming aware of your needs, first of all. Once you're aware of your needs, what's being met, what isn't met on this physical, earthly plane, then you can approach getting those needs met in a much more conscious way. For example, you know, if you say, I need to eat, and one way to get that need met is to get a job and get money and buy it, or another way to get the need met is to go dumpster diving, or another need to get that way to get that need met is to find a rich boyfriend, or whatever it might be, right? You know, who'll take care of me. So there's many, many different ways to get those needs met, and once they're conscious, you just have an unlimited amount of strategies to do so effectively, and you'll find you don't go into these white knight, white knightess situations where you're trying to save the other person in order to have them maybe at some point start fulfilling your needs. And why would you do this in the first place? Ultimately, you would do this because you don't believe that someone would simply meet your needs without you exercising, putting in an absolutely massive amount of energy into them in the first place. You know, if you were good enough, then someone would be meeting your needs already, the thinking goes. So if I, you know, do something Herculean, absolutely, actually impossible, if I change someone who doesn't realize they need to be changed and help them be completely healthy and powerful and reach their potential, as if I don't have enough trouble doing that myself, but assuming I did that, that'd be a Herculean, amazing task. That would be a miracle. I mean, not even God can do that. Otherwise, he would be, and everyone would be at their potential, right? So not even God dares to try to fix everyone's broken wings and make everyone perfect and fulfilling their potential completely. But if you felt good enough about yourself that you believe that someone would fulfill your needs without you doing this impossible task first, you know, slaying the dragon, slaying 100 dragons actually would be easier than making someone else change. But once you've done that, then by golly, they have to love you, because that's freaking amazing, and they'll get your needs met. Actually, you don't have to do anything so amazing, so fantastic to get your needs met. You're worthy of having your needs met now in negotiation with other people. And since we don't know how to negotiate to get our needs met, I will discuss that another time, because this has actually been a lot of content for just one sitting, I think, for most of us. But yeah, abandon white knight, white knightess. You can't do that. You know, a lot of it plays subconsciously. You don't even realize you're doing it, you know, until you're in the middle of it, and then you're kind of in trouble. So a lot of it plays subconsciously, and with any good therapist or someone that you're talking to about your life, you'll be able to sort of avoid these situations a little better, because you'll be adding some light and knowledge to the processes that are going on. And I always think it's much better to talk to someone professionally, or at least someone who's consciously agreed, again, we're talking about getting needs met, to help you get light and knowledge about what you're doing, rather than a friend. Because when you're dealing with a friend, the friend doesn't want to lose you. So the friend can't really say extremely honest things to you about what he or she sees, right? And a therapist, you know, is more likely to, even though they don't want to lose you too, but for a completely different reason. So anyway, find someone who can talk honestly to you, and they'll help you avoid these situations before you become conscious about them. And as you start to become conscious of this pattern, look at why it is that you don't think that anyone would do this for you. And then you're looking at your self-worth, self-esteem, self-image issues. And this is also a gigantic topic that we'll cover later. In the meantime, if you're in this situation, make it conscious. So if you feel that you're trying to change someone right now, happens to a lot of us, then say, hey, look, you know what? I don't feel like you're meeting my needs now, and I'm trying to change you so that I have enough capital, so to speak, with you for you to change my needs, or for you to meet my needs. and I'd like to stop this, then you can do that, or just stop changing the person. That's good enough if you're fine with it. And if you say, and if you find that the person isn't meeting your needs right now, you're in the middle of this, you're trying to change them, you're frustrated, they're not changing, then just say, hey, you know what? This situation isn't meeting my needs, and I'm sorry if I gave the impression that it was. I was a bit confused, so I am just going to have to leave. And you don't need to make any massive explanation about it if it really truly isn't meeting your needs. You can just leave if you find yourself there in a situation that isn't satisfying you, that isn't meeting your fundamental needs, but that you're spending a lot of energy and time in dealing with. So I think I've covered this from about as many different directions as I possibly can. Well, given the time and the content, of course. But I'll look at this later on other podcasts. So this is Ryan Orach, and this is initially posted at byraba.com, B-A-Y-R-A-B-A.com. This was for Tuesday, 22nd of May, 2012. Hard to believe already, 2012. 2 days ago, a big eclipse, and all the energy shifted, and the poles split, and there were 3 days of darkness, and massive tsunami that covered the whole United States, and, you know, so it was a pretty deal. Anyway, no, that's supposed to come in December, so, yeah, anyway, but there was an eclipse, and that was pretty cool, and so people got some great pictures of that on Facebook. Maybe I'll link to them. Any questions, comments, issues with this, you can reach me at me@byraba.com. Or Google Ryan Orach, O-R-R-O-C-K, like Ryan or Rock. It's a kind of compound word. Ryan Orach. And you can find me on Facebook there and send a message. And I am happy to dive deeper into this or discuss this with you privately. Thanks for listening, and have a fantastic day.